Thank you guys for coming. We have finally completed the audit of the Office of Governor. And I'm just going to quickly go through. There's a couple of issues here that are similar in theme to some of the things that we had talked about in the audit of the Lieutenant Governor's office and some of the things that we were looking on in our review of the Attorney General. The first thing that we talk about in this audit is the use of state resources. Unlike the Lieutenant Governor's office or the Attorney General, we're talking about a broader issue on use of state resources, because in 2005 there was a law put in place that allowed for the governor to have transportation, security, and protection for the governor's office. And our concern here, and what we talk about in this recommendation, is that that has been interpreted to include all personal and political activities. While the Constitution says that you don't use state resources for political or personal use, this statute, in that interpretation, would allow for a sitting governor to campaign for re-election on the public dime. And so our recommendation here is that the General Assembly take a look at that, decide what their intent is, and address it, and especially now, because in a situation like today, where we're talking about a brand new governor and no one knows who's going to be, it's certainly a time where we can put aside any concern over whether it's going to be a Democrat or Republican, and address whether we really want to have state resources spent in this way. And I'm going to talk a little bit about security costs in a little other section of this. The second issue that we talked about in this audit has to do with just the overall running of the governor's office and the ability to track appropriations. What we found is that there are a number of staff people that are working directly for the governor in the governor's office, and yet their salaries and their costs are not paid from the governor's appropriation, but instead are paid from the Office of Administration. At one point, there were eight different people, and we dictate out which these were: a receptionist, a special assistant, the deputy director of legislative affairs. And these people's salaries are all of their costs are paid out of OA. So our concern here is we can't even tell, on the surface you can't tell what the operating costs of the governor's office are, because he is actually having many of his expenses paid in other places. We dictate out some of these specifics on that. In addition to just the governor's office, there's also employees providing services out of the mansion, and then various assets that are purchased as well. So our concern here and our recommendation there is that the governor's office should use his appropriation to pay for the expenses of running his office, and we ought to be able to tell what theirs are. And so OA should not be absorbing costs. The third section is on capital assets, and really our concern here is that there are a number of assets included in the governor's office and the mansion, and there was no tracking of those. We, in fact, had a listing of what the assets were at the change of administration, but that list was not given to the governor, and the governor did not request it. So they did not start keeping a list forward. And so really, we detail through some of the issues and some of the items, but we do point out that there was no list given to them, and then they didn't do anything to address it. There is no physical inventories taken, and our just concern there is that we safeguard the assets that should be in the governor's office and in the mansion. In number four, we specifically looked at mansion functions, and what we found is the state paid for about 70 functions that were identified as lunches and dinners and receptions. We did not identify problems with the use, only because there was no documentation to allow us to confirm one way or another whether these were appropriate functions. And I point that out because in the governor's office response, they say, well, you didn't find any instances of impropriety, so everything obviously was fine. Well, that is not the case. We don't know that anything was fine because there was a total lack of documentation. So even though we are not saying that there were uses that were improper, what we're saying is we can't tell that there were proper uses as well. And so certainly our recommendation is that the mansion functions need to be documented in a way that we can tell that it was used appropriately. Section 5 is on the security costs, and I alluded to this in when we talked about the whole overall cost of security. Our problem here is that we've got 12 patrolmen, and we've got these various costs and the cost of the transportation, and they're not tracked in the security division's appropriation, which means that the total cost of running the security detail for the governor, and that would be for official use and for the personal and political stuff, is buried in general highway patrol appropriations. And so it takes a significant amount of digging and trying to identify in order to even come up with the cost. When the governor's office issued their response, they said, well, obviously it wasn't so cumbersome that we couldn't come up with that, so it must be transparent. And I'm pointing that out because that is absolutely not the case. If you guys wanted to find out what the security costs were, you could not do it without hours and hours of reading accounting documents. And so it is cumbersome, and it really should be changed. And part of that could be, you know, the appropriation, of course, from the General Assembly, but the governor's office should request that and track that as well. In the next section, office policies and procedures, we talk about a lot of issues. And the overall theme here is how you run the office and some of the shortcomings that we're finding. When we began this audit, we began to look at many of the Sunshine Law issues and the email requests. And at the time we were in the field on these issues, the Attorney General appointed a task force to look into specifically email issues. And so our decision was to not evaluate specific instances under this so that we didn't use our state resources to duplicate something that was ongoing. So really what we addressed is just the overall policy. And what we do here under A is we show they really did not address email use, retention, Sunshine Law requests. The policy was not set up for us to be able to tell that they were complying with the law. We put the language that is in their policy here, but they don't specifically indicate that email records were covered, and they did not reference anything about the Secretary of State's guidelines for email policies. So really, our overall conclusion on this was they really did not have a clear policy in place to look at these things. And so we did not go into the detail of any specific requests. Then we went through several of the other issues that would be in the manuals, whether the statewide policies are adhered to or which ones were, mileage logs. We think that they should all keep a mileage log because that's our state policy and documentations for support of various expenditures. In this section, we go through and we give you some examples of many of the things that are problems. An employee that is getting comp time that shouldn't get comp time and various other issues. And our overall conclusion here is that there really was not a comprehensive policy of procedures. And in fact, the governor's office has said they are now conducting a review, and they're working on a new report of their office policies and procedures. So at least, you know, they agreed with us that there are various issues that need to be dealt with, and I think they're dealing with them at this point. The next section is something that we just always take a quick look at, and that would be, overall expenditures and whether you're having adequate documentation. Similar to many of the findings that we find in most areas that we looked at, you find various things that are problems. You know, we reviewed expense reports, and there we found that they were lagging very far behind. There wasn't supporting adequate documentation, controls over travel expenses, various things like this. And while there is nothing major that we point out as an overall problem, it certainly is just another indication that things need to be a little bit tighter. Controlled, and it's similar to what we found in the overall policies. The responses point out that everyone makes mistakes, and certainly they do. And our concern just is that you put policies in place that try to minimize the number of mistakes and make things a little more transparent and a little easier for everyone to be able to tell what the expenses are at the office. And that concludes the issues that we found in the governor's audit. and I would be glad to answer any kind of questions.
Governor's office says statute's explicitly clear. It authorizes. Do you disagree that the statute's clear? Do you disagree that it should be provided?
No, I think that the statute says you provide this. I also think that the Constitution says that you do not use state resources for personal use or political use, that you would not, you do that. And so what you've got is you've got a statute out there that if it is clear on its face that you would use it no matter what for personal and everything, then it would be in conflict with what our Constitution says. If, in fact, they wanted it to be carved out to use for political or personal use, I think it needs to be clear. Because right now, you can read each one of them in and of themselves and say, sure, this is clear. But when everything starts working together, it is certainly not clear. And so I think there needs to be an intent clarification there.
Is there a difference between a car and a security officer? A security officer is a state resource paid for by taxpayers. You're not suggesting that when he goes to political events or personal events, he should not take security with him.
No, here's our concern over this. Our concern over this is that the law in place right now is very broad, and it doesn't make any kind of allowance for the fact that it is personal or political. It just says you provide this. When we looked at the issues with the car on the Lieutenant Governor's audit, and we said, well, OA had come up with a policy on their own that said you would reimburse. Maybe that is the suggestion here. And we mentioned that. We said, well, if, in fact, the legislature says we want to provide security, we want the governor to have highway patrolmen with him at all times for personal and political, then maybe they would also make some type of statute that it will allow some type of reimbursement for political events or something like that. We're not trying to dictate what the specific recommendations would be. Our concern here is that right now, as interpreted, a sitting incumbent governor can basically go to all of their functions and do all of their things on public money. If that is, in fact, the legislative intent, then they need to clarify that and make some reference to the fact that they are setting it out, that is what they want.
But if you're right, if the Constitution explicitly prohibits
yes.
that, you can't change the Constitution by statute.
Well, I believe that. Because then I believe we have to address it in some way, which would be a recommendation, a statute that would allow for reimbursement or something like that. I mean, I think that we have to have something out there that will not have these two things in conflict. And that is our concern on the Lieutenant Governor's office as well, is because you can't just make this happen. You have to have some statutory authority.
Where do you draw the line now? You're saying this governor is in violation of the state constitution.
Yes. We are saying that this governor, that the way that the lieutenant governor was operating, that the way that the attorney general was operating, has shown us that there is an issue right now with the way that we are operating in the state on using state resources for statewide office holders, and that there needs to be some type of a reconciliation with that.
So you're not specifically looking at Matt Blunt.
No.
You're looking at, because the argument was made when Mel Carnahan died, the argument was made that instead of flying in some rinky-dink little piece of crap, he should have been flying on a good state airplane, and he might have been alive.
Yes.
And that was an argument that
if
was
you go back and you look at our governor's audits from years and years and years, you will see this as a consistent issue. We've got, you know, the state plane back to, you know, Governor Teasdale, where he was reimbursing the state for using the state plane. These issues have been out there for a long, long time, and we haven't dealt with them properly under the statutes. Now, what happened here, and the thing that makes this a little bit different, is in 2005, we did put a statute in place that said we're going to give you transportation, we're going to give you all of these things, but it didn't go far enough in recognizing that these other issues had been coming up, that we weren't allowed for reimbursement, but we were using it anyway, and that we've had a lot of kind of informal ways of dealing with it. And our concern is right now, when we've got an ability to have an open seat at the governor's office, it's the time to clarify those things outside of a party position and make sure that we're complying with everything that is our law.
Is there a way of getting around it, for instance, when the governor, we thought he was running for re-election, And he's going to every little community in Missouri with more than three people with this DREAM initiative.
Exactly.
Right? Handing out money. Now, we could argue that's part of his official duties, or we could say, hey, he's looking for votes.
Well, and we're not going to do that. Here's one thing that you get. You already get, as the incumbent governor running for re-election, the ability to go out and do all of your official functions. Now, if someone then is having purely a fundraising event for him in St. Louis, he also gets to go to that and take his security and drive the state vehicle or take the state plane or something like that, if you interpret the statute this way. So, you know, I think that our, you know, if you're looking at it from that perspective and drawing a line, the incumbent governor already has the ability to go out and use his position to enhance his profile. And that, you know, sure, it's only political because he's running for office. If it was an off year, he might still do those things. But our concern is then when you go to a purely political thing or a purely personal thing, that if that is the intent of the legislature to allow an incumbent governor to do those things as well, it should be clarified.
You've raised this issue with the Attorney General, Lieutenant Governor,
yes.
And you've not yet with the Secretary of State.
You know, the Secretary of State did not have a car. The treasurer's office, we are in the treasurer's audit right now. She also doesn't have an official vehicle. You know, we will look at this issue with every single one of these offices. The thing is that we're not finding it in the others. Okay.
Am I correct that so far, as you've raised this issue, Matt Blunt's the only statewide elected official that's refused to reimburse the state?
I guess that would be true. Now, there are no provisions for reimbursing the state. So now we're going back to the lieutenant governor reimbursed the state under a handshake agreement that wasn't authorized by statute. The attorney general has reimbursed the state when this all came up under an assumption that now we're going to reimburse the state because we believe that it is, you know, you cannot use the state resources. We haven't made any kind of recommendation that the governor reimburses the state because the governor is operating under a statute. The lieutenant governor was not. The attorney general was not. The governor is operating under a statute that on plain reading says, you know, you can do this. Only when you combine it with the other issues that we have with the Constitution and state resources do you get to should the governor be reimbursing. And I just think it's something that the legislature should be dealing with. And now, yes.
How much money are we talking about?
Well, you know, that is a good question. And I can't tell you because what we found is, you know, we look at the security detail. And we know that this is buried in the appropriations, but we do talk about some of the estimates on just security. But we didn't go in and say, was this personal, was this political, and do any of that type of analysis. Nor should we, because as it stands right now with this statute, I mean, there is a clear position that the governor's office has taken that all of that stuff is allowed under the statute. And so we're not going to go in and try to guess that. And we couldn't come up with that if we wanted to.
In your opinion, is there any willful manipulation of the law by the governor's office?
No, I don't think so. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that the legislature came in and gave him a statute that allowed him to do all of this under that interpretation. We just think that there's a conflict.
I just want to be clear on something. The way they do it in Washington, if the president, he uses Air Force One when he campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
However, he reimburses a very low rate, but nonetheless, he reimburses.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
If we were to do something like that here, you're saying we would have to change the Constitution?
No, we're not. Our problem with the reimbursement issue with the lieutenant governor's office wasn't, I mean, that would have complied with the Constitution that he was reimbursing. The problem was there was no statutory authority that allowed him to do that and reimburse.
And with the governor?
There also is none. What the governor has is a statute that says he can use it, but it doesn't make any distinction between personal and political functions, and we believe that if, in fact, you know, I mean, it's a whole other can of worms if the General Assembly says, yes, we want the governor to be able to campaign with public money, and then we'll go there and address it. We don't think that was the intent. We think that there should be some kind of reimbursement policy for the governor's office as well.
The language of the governor's office response, you've got it in this audit, You're wrong, go away.
Well, and if you look at all of their responses, you will find that they said, you're wrong, go away. So, you know, I don't take that to heart. And I don't go away, so it's...
But did it surprise you? Absolutely, because you're really not attacking him.
No.
For doing anything.
No. I've seen it all. Well, I haven't seen it all yet, but I've seen a lot of it. And what happens is people sit down and they make these responses, and it's kind of one of these, you know, you condense it down into a few words, and they believe that the statute is clear. I believe the words in the statute are clear. I agree with them that the words say governor uses this. It's just that if you put it in context and you put it in a bigger picture and you look at what's happening here, that's our concern. So, yeah, there is a little harshness there, but that's okay.
So, talk a little bit more about the email findings. Obviously, there was a big controversy about that last
Right.
Time. How does that relate to this? With having those policies in an employee manual, would that have potentially headed off any of those issues?
I think so. And here's what we do usually when we come in. We look at, you know, we look at all of these office policies. We look at the, you know, we go in and we'll say, show us your Sunshine Law request logs and what you've done to comply with these, and we check and make sure that people are complying with Sunshine requests in accordance with their policies. Well, the first thing we do is we say, well, what's your policy? What do you do? And is your policy complying with the law and what you're supposed to be doing? And then we see if you're following your policies. So what we did here is, you know, we went in and we looked at that overall picture. We found that the policies that they had in place, or however they were doing business, was not really in compliance with the Sunshine Law. They had not adopted or were not using or acknowledging, for instance, on email, they were not acknowledging the Secretary of State's guidelines on email. In the way that they conducted Sunshine request responses, they weren't adhering to what the overall policies are of the state. They didn't have that all down in their particular, you know, employee manual as to how they deal with these things. And so we said, you know, you're not already, you know, first you got a policy issue, and then you can go beyond that and say, yeah, you're not complying with what you should have been doing either. But I believe so. I think if they had in their policy manuals, here's what we do when we receive Sunshine requests, here's how emails are handled, then, you know, we might have seen a different outcome on this whole email issue. And then our decision not to then go into the specifics really is partially because, you know, that is really not our function. Our function here is to look and see, do you have the policies in place and are you following them? And what we found is the policies weren't in place.
So he came out of this without any sense as to whether or not there was a pattern of record destruction at all, whether the chief of staff had Eckersley charges that he ordered backup tapes destroyed. Do you have any evidence one way or the other as to whether that happened?
Here's what we did. We requested all of the, you know, Sunshine request logs. We looked at the information that had been sent out to the press. We were in the field trying to weigh these issues and make decisions as to how detailed and how much we were going to look at specific instances. When the Attorney General's office appointed a task force to look specifically at those issues, at that point, we've got a lot of documentation to sift through and decisions to be made as to whether this is something that we should be doing or whether there was a different authority out there to do it. And at that point, we said, we're not going to spend a lot of our staff time duplicating efforts that the state is already paying for now with a different group coming in to look at that specific instance. And so we made the decision not to go into that.
Collected some information.
Yes, we have collected information.
Do you have any evidence that the governor's chief of staff or his general counsel have ordered destruction of public records?
We do not. We did not go to a point where we would reach any conclusions one way or another on that.
Do you see your findings on this in any way affecting either that investigation or the ongoing lawsuit by Mr. Eckersley?
I don't think so. Our findings were that they didn't have the proper policies in place. And we basically stopped there. If they'd had the policies, they did not have the policies in place that they would have followed in order to even be complying with the law.
Is the governor's office unique in that respect, or do a lot of offices also lack that?
we see that, you know, we see a variety. When you, you know, generally in these statewide offices, we've adopted the Secretary of State's guidelines. In fact, you know, Matt Blunt was the Secretary of State when this was adopted. So, you know, we operate under that. The Treasurer's Office operates. The Lieutenant Governor's Office operates under that. Generally, the policies are in place. And then you can look and say, okay, you've got the right policy in place. Are you complying with it? In this instance, the right policy wasn't even in place.
This email retention thing that the governor has directed all that to create, does your audit take into that, or did you finish before that came along?
Yeah, we did.
Do you know the status of that? Does that satisfy your concern?
No,
anything about that?
You know, our I don't believe that that would be necessary in order to comply with, you know, the email retention policy that the Secretary of State's guidelines set up. I don't think that there should be an issue with that. I think it's very clear what is and isn't a public document. Email is a method of transmission. It doesn't have anything to do with the content of the document or what the document is. So I just didn't see it as being one of these things that was, you know, a controversy. Whether you had it delivered by mail, by fax, or by email, it doesn't change the content of the document as a public document. And I think that the Secretary of State's guideline is pretty darn clear on that. And we haven't seen other people have an issue with that in the way that this governor's office did.
The Attorney General's, that three-member group looking into this thing, has reported just a complete stonewall coming out of the governor's office. They've had to file FOI. Did you run into any problems like that?
We had requested, you know, some information. We received some information about the same time they started requesting all of their information. We stopped and we said we're going to step out of the way. So I can't say that we had a problem with getting information because we stopped requesting it.
Do you have to issue? You've got a subpoena power.
We do.
Did you issue a subpoena?
We did not. We did not.
Seeing as though Matt is stepping down, or running for re-election, does it make all of this a moot point?
Well, I don't think so. It's part of the reason I wanted to talk about some of these issues, because some of the issues, specifically the travel and the security, is something that we ought to address right now, just because he is stepping down. Because next year, if Attorney General Nixon is governor, then people are going to be upset about it. If, you know, Congressman Hulsoff or Treasurer Steelman or something, you know, you've got three different people who we don't know how they will interpret or use this, and so it's the right time to figure out what the right answer would be.
And you never counted the number of trips back and forth to Springfield?
Never
did.
No, we never never did. We never did.
What prompted this audit? Is this a normal thing?
It's a normal audit, yes. Yes, we audit all of the statewide offices.
Every 4 years or what?
Mm-hmm. Once during the term. Mm-hmm. So, when it changes, which means, you know, it looks like we're going to do the governor's audit again at the beginning of the year, and the Attorney General's office again, and the Treasurer's office again. So,
the Missouri Republican Party has already sent out an email calling this effectively a campaign advertisement for Jay Nixon. How do you respond to that?
Well, you know, I don't think there's anything in here that could be characterized as something that would affect Jay Nixon and any of his claims. We look at certain policies and problems of the governor's office. Specifically, just the office policies or the email or anything like that. But I don't think that these are certainly not personal to the governor, and certainly wouldn't affect the governor's race against people who aren't in the governor's office.
Can I ask you about second injury funds?
Yes.
What was your reaction to?
Here's what I think. I think that last year in April, when we put out our audit and we said we need to do something about the second injury fund going insolvent, that something should have been done about it. And the response to doing something about it was to question my findings and to suggest that in some way I was protecting Jay Nixon's runaway expenses when we were suggesting that it was a revenue cap. In fact, the you know, the analysis that we put out said that the changes to the 2005 law would eventually kick in, that expenses were down, and that it was just a short-term revenue issue. So then the governor, of course, hired PricewaterhouseCoopers to come in and review it as well, and they came up with the exact same findings we did. They said it was a revenue problem, short-term revenue problem, and we paid $90,000 to do that. So then we're sitting there in August, and we don't do anything about it. There's a special session. We don't talk about it. We don't do anything about it. And now the governor is saying, let's get the attorney general to answer questions about how these people are or aren't going to get paid after we let the fund go insolvent. And I find that very disturbing, because I think that we ought to be addressing the solvency of the fund and protecting the disabled workers that are out there and relying on these payments. And I think it's a shame to try to make this a political issue, because it really doesn't have anything to do with the expenses of the fund. And that was our findings, and that was PricewaterhouseCoopers' findings. And so I think that that is an example of something that is purely political at the expense of the disabled workers.
There's nothing Jay Nixon has to communicate that would help solve this issue? Any information he's holding?
No. I mean, I think that all of the information on how the Second Injury Fund has been out there and very public, and Jay's office has access to it. Sarah Steelman's office does. We had access. It's in all of the reports. It's in our reports, and it's in the independent auditor's report. And the questions about, well, how would we pay these, and could we keep from paying them after it goes insolvent, just totally ignore the issue that we should be addressing, and it's keeping it from becoming insolvent in the first place.
You're saying this was temporary, and that kind of threw me a little bit. I mean, are you saying this is going to correct itself if that surcharge cap is...
Yeah, I do. We did, because here's what... Well, no, it will not correct itself, because we know there's going to be a gap.
And there will continue to be with that surcharge cap.
Right, but here's what we said. Here's what we know. We can project out how far, you know, how many months out before the changes that they put in 2005 take effect on the payments. So we know payments are, you know, going to be on the decrease because of the way that they defined some of these things. The payouts are lower, things like that. So at some point, that 3% surcharge and the payments catch up. Okay, because we weren't operating. 3% was enough in many of the years. The problem was when they put the cap in, we were already in a year that it was 3.5 in order to meet the expenses. And there was some accelerated issues, higher medical costs, some other things that caused there to be a higher number. Our projection was that over time, they do connect up. But in the meantime, we're going to go insolvent before we ever hit that. So it would have to be, you know, a flexible cap or a one-time infusion of money in order to get us over the hump or something like that in order to take care of it. It can't be corrected on the expense side. It has to be a revenue.
It's reasonable sometime down the road, maybe.
Right. And that might have been fine if they had said the cap will go into effect in, you know, 4 years when we project the revenues to go down or something like that. But that wasn't what was done. It was an immediate cap on revenue stream. And that's why our analysis and the PricewaterhouseCoopers analysis said you cannot affect this on the expense side because it takes this long for the expense side, to come into effect. And so by capping revenue, we knew that it was going to be a shortfall. Okay, anything else? All right, well, thank you guys so much.